Let me pray and then we'll jump right in. Lord, thanks so much for this morning. Thanks for the sunshine. Lord, I pray that we would just listen to you this morning. I pray that you would teach us, Lord, that we would get out of your way and you would help us with the topic of race and raising kids and teaching them to look at the world that you, the way that you do, Lord. Lord, thanks for this time together. Thanks for these friends. In your name I pray. Amen.
If any of you outliers want to move up, I do know they record it, and so sometimes questions are tricky to hear if you're far away. I'm just saying.
I brushed my teeth and everything for this, so you guys can get nice and close. Hey, I'm Jeff Pearson. This is my wife, Julia Pearson, and we get the privilege and honor of speaking with you this morning. We want to open up with a disclaimer that we are by no means professionals on this topic, but we get to talk to you guys about race and about parenting and being intentional and talking with our kids about race. And so to start, I want to read a pretty famous passage, Genesis 1, 26 and 27. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our own image, in our likeness, so they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. God created all people in his image, and there's no one person on this earth that is more clearly the image of God than another. We all reflect God's image equally. There's this book that Julia will be referencing later. It's called The Gospel in Color, and it's written for kids. It's kind of a devotional to lead kids through. And when talking with race and racism, they give this kind of description in the beginning. It says, "But an idea you have probably heard of, racism, tries to turn God's design upside down. Instead of agreeing with the Bible that all people are made in God's image and are equally valuable, racism says that some people are more valuable than others. This is a complete lie, and like all lies, it causes great pain. People who believe the lie of racism can do terrible things, whether they're saying something cruel about someone who is different from them or actually attacking them physically. People have killed other people for racist reasons, yet sometimes racism is far more subtle and sneaky. So sneaky, it seems almost invisible at first. Racism can be present in words and actions that seem polite, but are actually subtle ways of letting people know that they're less valuable because they are different."
Like Jeff was saying, we're definitely not, nor claim to be experts on the subject, but we've both felt pretty passionate about the topic of race for a good while, racial reconciliation, how we view race, the long-term effects of racism. Jeff and I met at one of the most culturally diverse private colleges in the nation, and we were right outside New York City, and being two white kids together, we were actually definitely in the minority there. So, and in 15 years of youth ministry working with Young Life, we've worked with a diverse group of kids and learned a lot from them about their experiences as people of color in our country today.
We have a family that's built biologically and also through adoption, and we feel incredibly blessed that our family of six, we have many different ethnicities and races covered, and those include Irish, Swedish, Norwegian, German, Scottish, Indian, Italian, Mongolian, Chinese, West African, Polynesian, and African American.
We have to write them down because we can't remember them all yet.
Thanks, Ancestry.com.
Yes. I would say now more than ever, for so many reasons, talking to our kids about race feels really important and very relative. I'd say now thinking of talking to our kids about race feels even more important in the last 10 years than if we had had our kids 10 years before this. And I guess and hope that all of you guys in your current lives parenting think a lot about how to talk to your kids about race and diversity.
We're going to ask you guys to turn kind of just where you are or find a couple people to do this next part with. We're going to break up into small groups a couple times throughout our time this morning. We want to you guys to answer the following questions. Do you talk to your kids about race? When did you start? How did you start? And if you don't, why not? So go ahead and get in groups of twos or threes or whoever, and I'll repeat those once you kind of found a couple folks to pull together with. So once again, the questions are, do you talk to your kids about race? When did you start? How did you start? And if you don't, why not? And if you don't, you're not in trouble. Okay?
Yeah.
So we're not going to have you stand up and
there'll
say.
There'll be no penalties, yeah. So. Yeah.
Feel the freedom. If you're just coming in, go ahead and grab a, there's groups around talking about a couple questions and they can fill you in on what we're doing. Okay, about one more minute in this area. All right, we're going to bring it back together. You guys can stay there because we'll do this a couple more times throughout our time this morning. But I wanted to open it up and see if there's anybody that wanted to share anything that they heard or shared in their times together of, you know, have you talked to your kids about race and racism and the different questions we posed to you guys? Anybody willing to share anything that was discussed? Dave.
So we kind of discuss it as a, not like a sit-down conversation, but more opportunistic. When you're in an environment or if a kid says something, mentions it, to have that opportunity to talk about it, kind of situationally.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Dave. Anybody else? Yeah, kids make it easy sometimes, right? Because they don't have a filter and they don't know if something's right or wrong, and it's kind of awesome.
And then there was a time where the family was like, wait, Dave's adopted?
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah.
Some differences,
also fun, too.
Not so recognized, yeah. We actually crowdsourced this about a month ago on Facebook, just these same questions to kind of see what the general population or just generally in my friends on Facebook.
We got back
some really great resources and a couple really good articles, but more than anything, most people were kind of starting this conversation with me of, I don't really intentionally talk to my kids about this, and part of it is because I don't know how, or I'm really afraid I'm going to do the wrong thing. So I'm hesitating and not doing anything at all, because what if I don't do it right? So we thought that was a really real feeling from a lot of people as far as race. Jeff had kind of a funny story about.
Yeah, I think sometimes the fear of not wanting to do it because you might do it wrong, I think just to enter into it, however you enter into it, and the Lord will give you the grace. I think when we don't have the conversation, we're missing an opportunity because we're afraid. A friend of mine, you know, my boss, who grew up in a white suburban setting and currently lives in that setting, was at one of the Young Life camps helping run camp for an urban week, which was comprised mostly of inner city kids from New York City, many, the majority of whom were kids of color. And the leadership team was reflective of the group that was there. So the leadership team was made up of people of color, which was fantastic. And there's a senior staff on Young Life named Paul. Paul's on stage leading the time. Casey's kind of in the back of the club room at the camp, and the kids are supposed to all, 500 of them, leave the club room and rush out to the next thing. Well, there's a large black bear that has been at the camp walking kind of in front of the club room and kind of thinking about the population inside the room, urban setting, not been around black bears a lot, not knowing this black bear too well. They decided to keep the kids in until the bear passed along the way. And so Casey's in the back of the club room, and the music team's on the stage, and they're playing a song. And Casey and Paul catch each other's eyes, and Casey gives Paul, like, one of these. And so Paul's like, okay. And so he has the band play another verse of the song. And Casey's like, all right, the bear is now passed. And Casey's like, all right, we need to get the kids. We can now move on and have everybody leave the club room. So Casey, once again, you know, whirls his hand around, and he's like, Let's wrap this thing up. And Paul's like, all right. So then he cues the band, and they play another verse of the song. And this goes on for, like, several minutes. And finally, I don't know if someone ran up on the stage and whispered into Paul's ear that the coast was clear and they let all the kids off. Well, later, Paul and Casey get together, and Paul says to Casey, what do you think this means? And Casey's like, wrap it up. And he's like, no, it means let's do it again. And so it was this, you know, a funny story, but a simple moment of, like, you know, two different cultures, two different perspectives, that if they didn't even, sometimes we don't even realize that we need to have the conversation to say, hey, you know, where are you coming from on this, and where am I coming from on this, and let's talk about this together so that when we need to give the wrap it up or keep it going symbol, we can come up with two different symbols. But I think when we miss that, when we're like, oh, I don't know how to enter into that conversation, it's a lighthearted example, but I think we need to think about, all right, you know, I have my perspective and my cultural upbringing, and other people have a different one, and we need to have the conversation together.
So some of us in this room grew up in the middle of racism. in decades where this was even more heightened maybe than now publicly, or completely accepted, sometimes maybe even denied. And some of us, like Jeff and I, who grew up in the 80s and 90s, grew up being taught that racism was a sad part of history. And it's kind of over now, and we've moved on, and we were told the solve to this problem was colorblindness. In the last decade, especially in the past 5 years, we've all seen in our society that this is not at all true or a cure, and it never has been. I think the first thing we need to do as parents, and even more so just as sinful human beings, is to be able to start examining our own hearts. As we parent, looking into ourselves and at our own language and actions. I don't think in parenting, when it comes to really important topics like sex or consent or racism, we can kid ourselves into thinking, oh yeah, more is caught than taught, and just be a good Christian and our kids will figure it out. I do think that we need to be honest with ourselves, though, that we all have racism and bias in one form or another, and that is sin that has been handed down, and we need to deal with it in our own hearts to begin to help us move forward with our own kids. This book here that Bethann gave us as a source, like Jeff mentioned earlier, he read from it. It's a family devotional. It comes with an adult book, and we've been reading through it with our kids at dinner, and it's just a really basic, simple, very beautifully illustrated source that's kind of laying out the truth. And honestly, I think as adults, it's a really good read because it's just giving the basic gospel message about racism. Like, the Lord created us all in his image. There is no person that is less God or more God than all of us together were created in his image. Sin has perverted the world and created racism. It's an ugly lie. And we have hope in Jesus. Like, this is the basics of the books. And reading through it, you know, I think there's a million things that conversations that we could have, like Jeff was saying, across cultures. There's so many good articles and books and documentaries and ways that we can educate ourselves as adults. But I think more than anything, the biggest deal, especially as parents, is examining our own sin and being real with our Savior and our Creator about where our heart is at with these topics. And maybe, you know, asking for him to illuminate the ways that we have our own bias and racism in our hearts. So from there, once you figure out how sinful you are, you can move into just some things about, you know, the different stages. We kind of broke it down into different stages. As our kids grow, what are ways that we can work on this in our families? So a lot of it we can start with as soon as they're, you know, listening age, maybe not even speaking age, toddler and preschool. Being preemptive, I think, is really important. Talking to our kids about colors from the very start. You guys all have been in that moment where you're out in public and your kid says something really awkward and embarrassing about someone else's appearance that they can hear, you know, in the grocery store line. And I think more, the earlier the better to talk proudly and comfortably about skin color and hair differences and the richness of diversity. I think the more we practice this, some of us might feel, one of my friends was saying in a conversation with me, like, I feel uncomfortable pointing this out. Like, I feel like it's hard for me. And I'm like, well, all the more reason for us to practice, right? To just kind of highlight those things and highlight our Creator and how rich he's made this world and kind of start to change that worldview. Talking with our kids openly about, is my thing still working? About their skin tone, their friends' skin tone, the different ways kids in their class wear their hair, and how beautiful and creative God is to put this all together like this. And like you guys were saying, these are things often our kids bring up themselves. Two of my favorite kids' books, there's a million good ones out there. There's some really not great ones out there too. But two I love, one is called The Color of Us, if anybody has littles and they want to write that down. It's just a great book written by people of color about those conversations with kids and talking about the different, like in a playful way, the different tones of skin and the world that that makes together. Another one I've loved just in talking about, my Ruby was always obsessed with hair of color. Like, she would beg me to wear 10 braids when she was little. And there's a book called I Love My Hair that I really loved. But when your kids say, so here's a little example. I read a couple different child psychologists talking about how to engage these kind of conversations. And I think we can worry as parents, like, what if I'm not politically correct with my kid? What if I say the wrong thing or I say something weird and they repeat it? So this was kind of a basic outline. So your kid comes home and says, Mommy, you know Jenny with the dark skin in my class? Or maybe your kid comes home and says, you know Jenny with that really pale skin in my class, or whatever. You don't say, honey, don't call someone by the color of their skin. You know what I mean? And just cut off the conversation there. You say something more to the effect of, oh, that Jenny, doesn't she have the most beautiful dark brown skin? That's because she's Indian, and her relatives came over to America from India. And your skin is peach-colored because you're Irish, and your relatives came to America from Ireland. Kind of highlighting that, like, America is made up of people. There are no true Americans, P.S., except for Native Americans. So all of us came over from somewhere at one point, and this is how people got to be from all different cultures. And then I saw this highlighted a couple different places. I thought it was cool. Just tapping into the scientific facts of melanin, which is what, you know, saying to your kid, yeah, Jenny has more melanin in her skin. Melanin is what gives skin and hair color, and some people have more melanin in their bodies, and some people have less, depending on the culture and place that they come from. And kind of explaining, when I was listening to this, the person was highlighting, explaining this is covering over, we're all the same exact. We have different things inside of us that are cool, that make our cultures cool, and that make our skin and hair turn out different ways, but we're just people. And then turning that conversation not anymore just about those things, but highlighting that Jenny is a person, just like your little person is a person. What do you like about Jenny? What does Jenny like to do? You know what I've noticed that you and Jenny have in common? And kind of just starting those conversations always, like, not shaming a child for having questions or noticing things like you guys were saying, like just being such great observers, explaining where those differences come from, and then coming back and highlighting the similarities, which I think we as adults need to do often too. And think about yourself in those conversations, or outside of those conversations, how do you talk about people who are different than you? When you are talking about a new doctor that you saw, do you say, I went and saw this doctor, she was white, or I went and saw this, or I met this new lady at school, really nice black mom. Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you talk about people? Do you talk about people as people, or are you constantly highlighting people's differences from you?
We're going to turn back into those small groups that we were in before, and we'd love to for you guys to talk about this. What are some things you guys have done to have open conversation in your homes about diversity and the way God made us? So things in your home that you've done to talk about diversity. Go ahead and take a minute or two and get back into your groups about that. Would anybody be willing to share a couple ideas or thoughts that came up in the small groups about having diversity conversations in the home? Yeah, Alan. Yes.
It's a good introduction to, you like that kind of food. Why? And is it representative of the culture? And why don't you like that? And so that's an entryway to culture. To link to that, also like traveling, if it's just into another part of the town or city, I think trying to do that a little bit gets them out of their own.
Yeah. Alan was saying food and travel are two great ways to have natural conversations. Agreed. I agree with that. Anybody else? Did I cut somebody off? Okay. You know, one thing we were thinking about too. Oh, sorry, way back there. Thank you. Yeah, that's a great point.
So Becky was saying being vulnerable about our own strivings and missteps with diversity.
Yeah. We were thinking about this in our own home, and we started looking this idea of look around your house and ask the questions about what your kids are doing and playing with. Do they see themselves only in the things that they're playing with as little kids? And I think some of this comes out of a place of, are we intentional with our kids? What's their worldview like? I know when I was little growing up, I didn't have, you know, my kids' world is vastly different than mine, largely in part because half of our children are kids of color. And so it's fun and encouraging for me to see, like, and this isn't necessarily something I was doing intentional as a kid, but when I would draw as a kid a drawing of kids, they all looked like me. But it's fun to watch our kids, like when Grady draws a picture of just kids playing, it's like mostly not white kids, which is really cool to see the difference there. but we're thinking about that, like, are all of your daughter's dolls the same color as her? Are all of your son's books about children who look just like him? Are all of the shows you watch with characters with the same culture as yours? We want to start to diversify intentionally. Long before we knew we were going to have a diverse family, when we just had Ruby, our oldest, we had dolls of color. This was important to us because we went to a church at the time that was mostly white people. She was a part of a preschool with mostly white people, and part of our family and our extended family, which was entirely white people at the time. When she was 2, 3, and 4, without us doing this, she would have had no way of knowing that the world was so much bigger than just the white scope she had at that time. We didn't want her to be deprived of the richness of God's beauty in the world. So we want to work this into our kids' environments so that they do not see other cultures as exotic, but instead, or just that these are what people are like. We want to honor the differences and celebrate them, but that it be more a normal part of everyday conversation. Think about this with ourselves as our kids are growing. Do we act like we're the only people in the world in our culture and this is how we do things? Or are we, like Alan said, are we intentionally going to other places and doing other things that represent other cultures? Are we listening to different types of music? The sermons and podcasts, the news anchors, are we getting those sourced from all the perspective of one culture? Or are we intentionally, hey, I'm going to read a book about Christian leadership from someone who's from another country? Are we going to be intentional and make sure that that trickles down from parents down to kids? So another question that we'd love for you guys to chat about for a minute is, what are some things that you guys have done to diversify your homes? We kind of listed some small examples and larger ones. Oh, yeah. I guess we could just share these ones out loud. But what are some ways that maybe you've diversified your homes? We shared one small example is we bought brown baby dolls so that Crosby could have a brown baby to carry around, which he loves. His baby Ta is his name. If you see him, you can ask him about Ta. What are some other things that maybe you guys have done? We've had time to think about this. Oh, yeah. We'll go here and then here.
Oh, so, you know, when you go to the library and check out books, like, pick out books. I've picked out books with kids of color on the cover. Sometimes just so it's different. Or they have, like, you know, books about alphabets and different languages. And you're just, like, intentionally looking for more diverse reading materials for my kids.
I think that's cool. And I do think there's, like, that more and more books have, like, a mix of, like, United Colors of Benetton Children. Like, do you know what I mean? But to have books that are, like, specifically about a whole culture. You know what I mean? Or that are, the whole cast in the book is from a totally different culture, you know, which is cool.
Yeah, Helen mentioned getting different books from the library from different cultures. Ruth Ann.
Ah.
Yeah, Helen stole hers. She stole it.
Yeah.
Oh.
She's Chinese. So, yeah, but it is funny. But just those
Yeah. But then you're able to have, like you said in the beginning, like a natural conversation of like, hey, you know, it's cool about China, they have this, this, and this. And what's cool about sushi is from Japan, then you open up that conversation about Japan. Oh, she could also like sushi and be from China. Right? Yes. Sushi is a unifier. Absolutely. Video game diversity.
Yeah.
That's good. That's great. Thanks, you guys. Yeah, back here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. You actually just highlighted the entire next part I did. I'm doing so. It's perfect.
To add on to that, to go to those places, like, to add on to that, to go to those places without, like, fear.
Yeah.
Because I, like, when you, I don't know, this is partly because I spent a lot of time living and working in an urban environment, and I became completely unafraid of that place. I was probably less afraid of that place than some of my kids who lived in that place. I felt very comfortable there. But, like, when you change how you're acting and behaving when you sort of cross over the invisible barriers and, you know, like, neighborhood race lines thing, so you start acting differently, like, that's where the kids do pick up on that. They do catch that. Why are we, you know, why are we doing this? Like, why can't I roll down my window? You know, like, things like that. It's, like, there's a way in which, like, if we're going to be intentional about it, be intentional all the way about it.
Yes, well said. That's also what I wrote. So the next part was go places that are not just full of people of your race, no matter what race that is. Some things are fixed. A lot of things are fixed, like where we go to school and hopefully where you go to church. Hopefully you keep coming here. But do you go to a pool or a grocery store or a vacation or restaurants, parks, colleges, where the huge majority of everyone looks like you? And just like Charlie was saying, use this experience when you go somewhere where you are the minority to take in that feeling. And for that 25 minutes or maybe 5-day vacation at the most, think about how it is something you got to choose and what it feels like. And when your curious little kid pipes up and mentions it, use the opportunity to talk about the privilege of majority and think together what it must like be like to be a minority and how you want to treat others because of that. Like you were saying to Charlie, like it feels a little weird, right? Like it almost feels a little there's something a little yucky about feeling like, oh, I'm doing this on purpose because I'm going to, like, show my kids, like, all the right things, you know? So there has to be that, like, real check in yourself and in your heart about just the overall intention, and that practice does make things more comfortable. Is it my part again?
Right here.
Oh, so also remind yourselves as your kids grow that not only is the world very diverse, but the family of God is so diverse. And I've often joked that if you can't be comfortable being in a minority, being the minority in a grocery store or vacation, you're going to be pretty uncomfortable in heaven. So I don't know. Now, I don't know the theology behind that, if we're going to have skin in heaven. But if we do, white people will certainly be the minority there, as the world is a lot bigger. And the family of God is very big. As your kids get a little older, like elementary school and on, this was something.
Yeah, we want to, as your kids grow, highlight your own cultural heritage while emphasizing others as well. And the beauty of a country that does not belong to one people group more than any other. And the idea of living in cultural humility, like Charlie said, recognizing that there is a majority privilege that a lot of us are born into, and recognizing that there are people who are not, and how do we intentionally bridge that gap, or how do we educate our children on this is not the world, like this is a small sample. One thing that we do in our home around Christmas every year is we do we celebrate our own cultural heritage by having a Feast of the Nations. And so that list I read to you earlier of all the backgrounds that our family represents currently, we try to eat a food at the table. Julie's an amazing chef, and we are able to eat something from each of those countries.
Half of it's frozen from Trader Joe's, just FYI.
I wasn't going to mention that part, but the first part's still true. So we try to eat foods that represent each of those many countries that our family is made up of. And again, watching our kids' worldview change is so fun. Like when at school, when the kids were younger, and Ruby would say, you know, I'm part Indian, and kids would be like, I am what? No, you're not. You're totally not. You're white. And she's like, no, I'm part Indian. Like, to her, one of her brothers, families, you know, her yeah. two of her brothers. And so, like, it's just commonplace for her. Like, this is part of who she is.
Well, and I think when you celebrate your heritage, even if maybe you feel like your cultural heritage is boring, you know, like maybe you're just one. But, like, when you celebrate that,
no such thing.
And your kids grow up feeling celebrated, it's so much more likely that they will celebrate other people's heritage. Mm. So, now that our kids are getting older, I also think it's a great thing to just point things out to them conversationally that you see as unfair or funny. Our Ruby was the first one to point out in a Christmas play here when the baby doll for Jesus was white. She was like, they need a brown baby. Jesus wasn't white. Because we always pointed out to her in Bibles and pictures in church, like, that's so weird that they would make all these people white, right? Like, these people are from the Middle East. What do people from Middle East look like? Pointing out these things to our kids and educating them to be able to have sharp eyes to see when things are off, you know. Start to, you know, mention when you're at Target, isn't it boring that all these babies are the same color in the baby doll aisle, you know, or pointing out the beauty of a family who has diversity in it, or a mixed family. Talk about heroes of color. If you are a person of color, talk about white heroes who have been peacemakers instead of just oppressors. And I think a big thing as we're learning, as our kids go through school, and we have one entering middle school now, be aware to fill in the gaps that your kids are missing in their education. If I'm really honest, our daughter Ruby is going into middle school, and most of what she's learned about racism in school is that it's a thing of the past. And I think that's because there's a lot of tricky dynamics for teachers and schools and education, but that's not the truth. And it's really important for us as parents to teach them how real racism is currently, and the profound effects of sin that last forever, that we just cannot simply get over. I love this way. This was an awesome way of explaining how racism is a forever problem. There was an article I read, it's called Here's How to Raise Race-Conscious Children, and the author said she would do this activity with kids. She said, give children balls of string and ask them to move around the room, unraveling their balls of string to make a very tangled web. Once they're finished, ask them to untangle it. They will soon find that it is much more difficult to untangle the web than it was to create it in the first place. Then explain that working to make a society fair is a lot like untangling this web. So we're going to end this part by reading an article together, and then we'll move into some, you know, more sharing and questions and stuff. But this was an article I read. It was actually written probably about 5 years ago, so not even in the middle of a lot of heightened stuff in the media, but it was written by, it's called An Open Letter to the White Parents of My Black Son's Friends. Some of you may have seen this. It went viral a couple years ago. And when I read it, we had just brought home Davey not too long ago. And little did I know we'd have two sons of color. And the way this article has hit me is huge. So this is from one mom's perspective, but I just thought it was a really honest depiction of what is currently going on and what our kids need to be taught to fight against in our country. So,
and disclaimer, like we said earlier, we're not trying to represent the majority or the minority, because we feel like that's a huge, huge thing to try and do. But we're just trying to present some information. This article, the way the woman wrote this is framed in much of a kind of a white and black situation. But we recognize that we're trying to look at this across all. So it's much bigger than that. So we're going to kind of break this up together. But it starts out by this. This is the woman writing. I've been wrestling with talking to you about some things I think you need to know. I've wrestled with it because I feel my own sense of shame. Shame that I didn't know or understand these issues before they touched my family. I felt fear that you'll respond in subtle ways that make it clear you aren't safe for my child. I've been concerned that you won't believe me when I feel more, and I'll feel more angry than if I hadn't said anything. But my son is getting older, and as he transitions from an adorable black boy to a strong black man, I know the assumptions about him will change, and I need your help in keeping him safe.
We talked to our son about safety issues. We talked to him about being respectful of police and anyone in authority, about keeping his hands where they are visible, about not wearing his hood up over his face or sneaking through the neighbor's backyard during hide and seek or when taking a shortcut home from school. We are doing what we can to find this bizarre balance of helping him be proud of who he is and helping him understand that not everybody is going to see him the way we see him. Some people are going to see him as a thug before they ever know his name, his story, his gifts and talents.
But here's the thing. As much as we can try to protect him and teach him to protect himself, there may come a time when your child will need to be involved. As the parents of the white friend of my black son, I need you to be talking to your child about racism. I need you to be talking about the assumptions other people might make about my son. I need you to talk to your child about what they would do if they saw injustice happening.
I know that in a white family, it's easy to use words like colorblind and feel like we're enlightened and progressive. But if you teach your children to be colorblind, they may not understand the uniquely dangerous situations my child can find himself in. If you tell your kids racism happened a long time ago, and now it's over, and use my family as an example of how whites and blacks and browns can all get along together, you're not doing me any favors. Just because you haven't seen obvious examples of racism in your own life doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
It's easy to think we live in a colorblind society, when you don't know that about 2 weeks ago I was on the phone with the principal at my son's school to discuss the racial insults he was regularly receiving from the student sitting next to him. I was thankful for how seriously the school handled that incident, and we consider it a huge victory that my son felt safe telling his parents and teacher how he was being teased, since many kids don't. It is easy to think that we live in a post-racial society when you don't know that a neighbor of mine called the Child Protective Services hotline to complain about my kids behaving in the exact same ways as the 10 other white neighborhood children they regularly play with.
They regularly behave.
Playing in the street when we live on a cul-de-sac, playing out in the front yard without shoes, asking for snacks from the neighbor parents. These are actual complaints that were made.
The thing is, I doubt that neighbor even thinks of himself as racist. But the fact that when the white kids of the neighborhood do it, it's kids being kids. But when the kids of color are involved, it's got to be addressed by the authority, shows the underlying bias of his assumptions. This isn't concern, this is harassment. So white parents, please talk to your kids about racism. If they see my son being bullied or called racist names, they need to stand with him. They need to understand how threatening that is and not just something to be laughed off. If your child is with my child playing soccer at the park and the police drive by, tell your child to stay. Just stay right there with my son. Be a witness. In that situation, be extra polite, extra respectful. Don't run and don't leave my son by himself. If you are with my son, this is not the time to try any new risky behaviors. Whatever trouble you get into, he may not be judged by the same standard you are. Be understanding that he can't make the same mistakes you can.
White parents, treat my son with respect. Don't rub his head because you want to know what his hair feels like. Don't speak black slang to him because you think it would be funny. If you're thinking about making a joke that you feel might be slightly questionable, don't do it, ever. Your kids are listening and learning from you, even in the jokes you tell. Be conscious of what media messages your kids are getting about race. Engage in tough conversations about what you're hearing in the news. Don't shy away from this just because you can. He can't. We can't. Be an advocate for this beautiful soul who has eaten at your kitchen table, sat next to your son at church, been at your child's birthday party. He is not the exception to the rule. He is not protected by my white privilege for the rest of his life. He is not inherently different from any other black boy at all. Their lives have value and worth and were created by God. I have hope that when your white parents start talking about these issues with our white kids, maybe there's where change will start. This is a pretty deep and cutting article that was written. And again, I think it applies across the board, not just between white and black. I think you can insert other cultures and other things into that. But this is a very real reality in the world that we're living in. And I think looping it all the way back to the beginning is that when we have the conversations and we're willing to feel uncomfortable in those things is when change takes place. It's our job as believers to fight against racism.
Yeah, I think all this made us think a lot about, as a church, you know, we're so on top of teaching our kids the fight against lust, the fight against drugs and alcohol, like the fight for purity in life. But are we teaching our kids this huge battle of standing up for what's right when it comes to race? And how much of it that is not our idea, but the Lord's idea, and something that is directly in war with his word. So do you guys, I think we have a couple minutes for thoughts or questions or...
I think it's valuable to loop back around too and just think about, I love the scripture you opened up with, which is, you know, we've all heard it, but we're all created in the image of God. And this book that Julie references is awesome with kids because I think kids, race, and a lot of other things is where it gets blurry of like, well, I'm more important than so-and-so or, you know, race and otherwise. And it's a reminder that like, no one reflects Jesus more than the person next to you. I mean, we all reflect Jesus the same in our worst and best times. There's no difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think that's
point.
Where the you know, where the battle comes in. Like, it's almost like preparing them, and then you know, sometimes as early as elementary school, like these situations where they can be standing up for what they believe and come in, and you know, more and more as they grow and even become adults, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
So ignorance is only insulting when it's arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
But ignorance that is acknowledges ignorance, and I would, you know, can you teach me? I want to know, and I want to listen.
Yeah, I think being humble in what we do and don't know, right? Like even when Jules and I were talking about sharing today, we're like, we have no authority to be up here talking about this. You know, like, that's not a humble brag, but I think it's real. Like, all right, we know some things that we didn't used to know, and now we know that there's a ton we don't know. Right.
And that'll give them the freedom to just be themselves.
Yep. Absolutely. Great point. Other questions or thoughts?
I think they have to.
One of the things that we kind of discussed in our group a little bit was about how we have brought diversity up, but not for it all, because it was kind of a non-issue whether our kids were exposed, whether our kids were in diverse neighborhoods or schools. So we weren't like pointing out how people are different, because they were just
Did you have something to that, Helen?
To your point and what was said, I think it's important to bring into the context that because of sin, there is things like institutionalized racism, there is unconscious bias. I mean, that's part of the fallen nature of the world. And in a good way, I think it is important, not just like you're saying, to celebrate differences, but also to the point about the letter and what Matt was saying, to recognize that because there are differences, some people will experience things differently, and it's unfair. And I think that's important to talk to with your kid.
Yeah.
To say, this is what's happening, and they're different. And because they're different, they don't get the same privilege as we would, or you would, you know.
Right.
So I think that's an important thing to discuss, not just how great it is to be different, but the fact that because some people are different, it's not fair. And that's part of the sinful nature of this world, the fallen nature of this world. And as Christians, we have a duty to represent the gospel and bring about the restoration by addressing the fact that there is injustice.
Yeah.
And we'll close on this and pray. But to address it, I think that's a great reminder, too, to say that there's many different ways to enter into this conversation. And I think you bring up a great point of, my upbringing, my parents, just, they're great people. This wasn't an intentional conversation. And I didn't live in a place where it was just, like you described, the beauty of that. And so I think you can lead with where you're coming from to say, I think it's a different angle for you than it would be for me when I was a kid, to be able to say, hey, to prep your kids however it's best for them, to say, hey, you know what's great about this? You know what stinks is sometimes there's places that aren't like this, or there's classrooms that aren't like yours. And I'm saying, I don't know what the magic age for that is, but like, coming into along our kids to where they're at and kind of bringing them from that place to the next. So you might be in a monoculture situation. We have to be very, very intentional to give them a bigger worldview. Or you might be in a place where it's just natural that they are a part of that already. And then that's the benefit. You get that as the jumping off point for these conversations to say.
We're educating that it's more than like a problem within our hearts, but in the whole world.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So.
But we're going to get kicked out.
Yeah, you guys are doing this. Joyce is doing it this way. She wasn't here for the beginning, so I don't know what this is at all, but this is. Hey, let me pray for us real quick. Real long prayer like this. Lord, thanks so much for this time together to even start to talk about a big topic that you care greatly about. Lord, thanks for the people in this room, and I pray that you would just continue to speak to us and that we would spread your gospel. In your name I pray. Amen.